Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
October 15th, there's the opening bell. We do it every year. We broadcast live from People's Health on the first day of Medicare open enrollment, although in a way it is, in a way it isn't. Leslie Keene joins us now, our friend, Vice President, Assistant Vice President of Marketing Communications at People's Health. How you doing, Leslie? Thanks for having us out again.
I'm doing well, Tommy. Good morning.
Can people come in now or not?
Yes, right. Absolutely.
So tell
We're
me what's
open
going
early
on today.
Today.
What are y'all doing here?
Yes, it's our annual enrollment period. This happens every year, October 15th to December 7th. We are able to enroll our 2026 benefits, and that means that people can start enrolling today to be eligible for our one of our Medicare Advantage plans that's eligible in their parish starting January 1st.
And just to be clear, nobody's going to high-pressure you or what's it going to take to get you into People's Health today? None of that. This is just you got some seminars coming up, right? It's to explain how Medicare works because it can get a little confusing with A, B, C, and D.
Absolutely. And we are Part C. We're a Medicare Advantage plan. And what that means, you have your doctors, you have your hospitals, and you have your Part D, as well as we have ancillary benefits. The Medicare Center, which is located at 3017 Veterans Memorial Boulevard, is really a community resource for those that are confused about Medicare. And it is. It could be overwhelming for those that are aging in or those that are looking to search for other plans for next year.
Because you do have to do something, right? You have to take some kind of action when you age into Medicare.
When you age into Medicare, yes, you definitely want to roll.
That's at 65?
Typically, it's 65, yes. And then what you want to do is you want to look at your options. You do have some time frames, 3 months before your birthday, the month of your birthday, and 3 months after. But you want to look at your options. You want to look at what providers you use, what prescription drugs you're in, and then what's the best fit for the services that you need. If you have a chronic health condition or if you're more healthy, you may have a different plan.
And if you don't do what you're supposed to do, if I remember correctly from last year, you can forever affect the rate that you pay for the rest of your life, right?
There could be a penalty, yes. Yeah. It could be a monthly penalty depending on how long you wait to enroll for that Part B.
And that goes on forever.
Yes.
That doesn't go away.
From my understanding, it does not go away.
So make sure you do what you're supposed to do, and it'll help you at People's Health. Here we got Joe's Donuts, a great day at Joe's Cafe, hot breakfast, fresh donuts, home cooking made daily. Stop by or visit joesknowsfood.com. We got some food for you here. We got World War II tickets while they last. We have tickets to the... What was the other thing we have tickets to?
Anyway, Oktoberfest.
Oktoberfest. That's right. Thank you, Leslie. I should have known that from the big pitcher of beer yet we're drinking it. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you, Leslie. 6:12 now at WWR. We'll take a break, come back, talk about the government shutdown. But come out and join us if you can, if you listen and you want to just say hi. 3017 Vets next to the chicken salad place. What's the name of that? Trader Joe's?
Chicken Salad Chick.
Chicken Salad Chick. And you can't miss us. Come, a lot of parking. We'll have food for you and coffee and all that stuff. A friendly staff. We're underway here at People's Health. Tommy Tucker back in a flash. WWL. All right, we are here at the People's Health Center, 3017 Vets. We're open right now. You can come on in, have some Joe's Donuts, joesknowsfood.com. You can find out more about that. We got donuts for you here. We got World War II tickets while they last. We got Oktoberfest tickets. And we also have David Schultz, who joins us now, our friend, professor of political science at Hamline University. Good morning, David. How are you?
I am doing well, and I hope you're doing well today, too.
I am, sir. What's new with the government shutdown?
If I said the word nothing, that's probably about captures it at this point. A lot of posturing,
okay.
A lot
seen
of
any movies lately?
Let's see. Good movies recently? Not really. I don't know. Nothing good comes out till Christmas now, I think, or Thanksgiving.
No, A lot of finger pointing is right. Let's talk about, you know, first of all, let's talk about, are they voting at all on this? Are they bringing it up to vote? Who, where would it come for up to a vote? In the House or this, in the House, right?
Well, it would come up in the Senate at this point because the House, the House has actually passed something. The sticking point, right? Well, depending on how you define the sticking point, is that because this is subject to the filibuster rule, you need 60 votes in the Senate, and neither the Republican plan nor the Senate plan—I mean, the Democratic plan—can garner the 60 votes to overcome the filibuster. So everything is really sort of sitting there at that point because you're going to need, was it like 7 Democrats to vote with the Republicans, or you're going to need, I can't remember what the number is, like something like about a dozen Republicans to vote with the Democrats at this point. So if that's, we're just sitting at this point. Like I said, if I just call the word finger pointing at this point, that's really what's going on.
Are we looking at maybe the longest shutdown ever? And at what point previous to this was the longest one? And what was the tipping point that caused them to get back to business?
Well, the previous longest one was during the Trump's first administration, and it was 35 days in terms of it. And what happened at that point was that the Republicans, you know, gave in. I'm forgetting the exact details in terms of what they gave in on, but they gave in, and the Democrats could sort of claim a victory at that point. Again, I'm forgetting the exact terms and conditions here. Here, I'm thinking it's going to go beyond 35 days. I was kidding with one of my students the other day, and he was asking the same question: how long is it going to go? And I said 35 days. And then I said, we need to check the betting lines in Las Vegas. And he said, why? And I said, there's got to be an over under on this at this point, or something like that. But I don't see anything that's going to bring it to a close within 35 days. What I'm thinking is the point where it might happen, but I don't know yet, is that since this is all about health insurance at this point and the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, as people start to enroll in the or look at their enrollments, you know, for the enrollment period for insurance this year, and across the country we're looking at what I think is probably the same thing where you are, double-digit increases in health insurance costs for this year. Maybe that's enough that starts to drive the two sides together as a bunch of people start to call the reps on both sides or the senators on both sides and say, hey, do something. So I think it's going to be something there. My guess is that the point of negotiation will be where the Republicans agree to extend the subsidies for health insurance, let's say, through the 2026 election. But that's just all conjecture and all guess on my part.
And that's what I was thinking, because if I'm the Democrats, what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, fine, we're not going to shut down the government anymore. But be aware that what's going to happen is these subsidies are going to go away. And when they do, you're going to wind up paying more. And that would coincide with the midterms. And at that point, the Republicans would own the subsidies going away and people would realize that it's hurting them. I'm not saying I'm for or against it. I'm just saying in terms of the political strategy, that's what I would do if I were the Democrats. Thoughts?
That makes sense. That makes sense on one, and I'm not disagreeing with you on one level, but the Democrats are being pushed within their party at this point to say, stand up to the Republicans, extract something now. Whether that's going to be the right political strategy, it's questionable, because we know that in general, that when the government shutdowns have occurred in the past, the party that has been blamed with initiating the shutdown pays a big price in the next election. And again, without taking any sides, in the last few shutdowns, the Republicans have been blamed for it. And right now, polls are suggesting that Republicans are being blamed for this shutdown, too. And so that's why I say it's the finger pointing, because right now the Democrats feel like they're in a good position. They can squeeze the Republicans, you know, with the shutdown. But at some point, I could see if the Republicans can message better, that maybe the blame shifts. But we're just not at that point yet. Because also, I think we're not seeing enough. It's terrible to say. There's not enough pain being inflicted upon Americans right now because it's only a partial government shutdown. Like I said, grandma's still getting her Social Security checks. Sure, parks are not open, but most people don't care. A lot of stuff people are just not seeing on a day-to-day basis. And so at this point, I think it's a combination of not enough pain going around and I hate to say this, but probably a lot of the public are saying, oh, got another government shutdown. What's new? What's the latest NFL score?
I think ultimately it's going to come down to who owns the increases in the health insurance because of the subsidies. It's it's proven that people will buy, forget the mandate, that people will buy insurance if it's affordable. So they're going to find out that the insurance is not affordable. And at that point, I think that's when the Democrats should say, look, we told you this is going to happen. And at that point, right before the midterms, they hang it on the Republicans. Again, I'm not picking a side. I'm just saying strategically that's what I would do. We'll pick it up. We come back 6:22. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 6:27, we're back with David Schultz, our friend, professor of political science at Hamline University. We're talking about who's going to get the blame for this government shutdown, and some airports refused to run a message that Kristi Noem recorded blaming the Democrats for this. They said it could be in violation of the Hatch Act. Explain what that is, if you would, please. What is the Hatch Act?
Okay, the Hatch Act was adopted in the late 1930s, 1940s, and was actually pushed through by Democrats to restrain Franklin Roosevelt because they were concerned that with the buildup of the government bureaucracy, he would politicize it and send all of his people out there and go do partisan political things. So what the Hatch Act does is to make it illegal to use government property or to use government time to engage in partisan political activity. Another way of phrasing it here is that I don't think the average taxpayer wants their money being spent by the government to push a political message, especially a political message they may not agree with, or they don't want the government to be out there, let's say, campaigning for the Democrats or campaigning for the Republicans on taxpayer money. So that's what the Hatch Act does. It's supposed to politically neutralize the bureaucracy. And by running this video, there's a pretty good argument here that the government may be violating that Hatch Act because it's now using taxpayer dollars to push a political message when they shouldn't be doing that.
So if you wanted to say, Kristi Noem wanted to say, I'm sorry about the government shutdown. We'll try to, TSA is working as hard as we can to keep your flights moving, blah, 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 but leave the Democrats out of it. There would be no problem there. The problem is when you blame it on the Democrats. And I think what people need to realize is the reason the Hatch Act exists is this time you might like the message, but next time your people may not be in power. So you may not like what goes on then. So you got to be careful about what precedents you establish, right?
That's exactly the case here. That's why I put it in terms of a taxpayer issue here. Do I want my taxpayer money funding a message by the government that I don't agree with? Gosh, no. Now, I still may not like the idea of Kristi Noem getting on and saying we're doing the best we can, but that's politically neutral, saying that, listen, we know there's a government shutdown, there's inconvenience, we're going to do the best we can to get you through security, stuff like that. That's good public information.
Well, and it goes with being in office, right? I mean, it's the perks of being in office. You won the election, okay, and then you're the designated appointee, so you have the right to go on and use that, and people can infer whatever they want. But when you explicitly blame one party or the other, that's where you kind of...
That's right, exactly. That's where you cross the line at that point. And again, we've got over 90 years of law regarding the Hatch Act. I could say that at one point when I worked in local government a zillion years ago, I was covered by the Hatch Act. It was great. I couldn't even go to a fundraiser under the Hatch Act at that point because I was barred under the Hatch Act, which was great because I could tell my mayor and say, God, I wish I could go, but federal law prevents me from doing this. It gives workers the capacity to say no, so they're not forced by the superiors to go do stuff that they shouldn't do.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. It is Medicare Enrollment Day on WWL at People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets near Causeway. Medicare Open Enrollment kicks off today. If you have questions, Medicare experts will be here all day, even right now, to help. Stop by. I'm here till 10, then it's Newell, then it's Scoot till 4. We'll love to meet you. Be right back. Right now, time for WWL First News here on WWL. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We are live here at the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets in Causeway. We got coffee and donuts from Joe's Cafe and Donuts, joesknowsfood.com, beg your pardon. We got tickets to Oktoberfest and World War II Museum, while they last. Come by, see us. We'd love to meet you if you have a Medicare decision for yourself or a loved one. Keep in mind, you have to make an active Medicare decision. If you turn the Medicare age, it's complicated, but they'll walk you through it here. Experts will be on hand. They're here right now, and somebody's already stopped by and gotten the lowdown on Medicare. People's Health is hosting special seminars to help educate you on Medicare at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. You do not need an appointment. Come on in. They'll be glad to help you. Jerry Bologna joins us now, the executive director of JEDCO, the Jefferson Parish Economic Development Commission. Give us an update on Jefferson Parish. How you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing well. I would have joined you in person if I knew donuts were there.
Well, you still got time. We're going to be here all day, Jerry. Come on. We got plenty of donuts. We got plenty of coffee, so we'd love to have you. Tell me what's going on in Jefferson Parish besides the People's Health Medicare Center.
They're a great Jefferson Parish-based company, so we're always supportive of them. But it's been a really exciting year. I've been on the show a couple of times this year to talk about some exciting projects in Jefferson Parish. And one of the newer ones that came online that we celebrated was the opening of Amazon's first same-day delivery fulfillment center in Louisiana. Totally robotic. You're going to start seeing your Amazon packages arrive even earlier. Many of them the same day. If you order early enough in the day, they'll arrive at your door the same day.
Really?
So great development in Jefferson Parish. Everybody wants one of these in their community, and we have the first in Louisiana.
See, I like there to be some time between when I order and when it comes in, because I forget, and then it's kind of like Santa Claus comes and drops stuff off, and you don't know what's in the package, you know?
Nothing better than an impulse buy that shows up within a couple of hours.
Well, that's true. That's another good point. Tell me about Clearview. What's going on there?
Well, Clearview, if you've passed recently, you're seeing some construction take place. That's actually going to be the new location for Zia's. They're going to move Zia's out of the mall into the out parcel. And once that's done, you're going to see in earnest the demo of that interior part of the mall take place. So Target's staying. The Ochsner Super Clinic right there is going to stay. But that part in between is going to see an amazing transformation. You're going to see a destination retailer take place or pop up right there next to the Target. And then on the backside where the movie theater is, underneath the movie theater, I think you're going to see another entertainment offering that's going to be really exciting. So a lot of great things on the horizon at Clearview. We're just waiting for that. The Zia's location is the linchpin right now. As soon as the new location's finished, I think you're going to start seeing the demo of that mall.
Destination retail, you say?
Yep. That's what we want. We want people coming to into Jefferson Parish to spend their money.
Do you have an idea what it is?
I have an idea. You don't.
Will you be sharing that anytime soon as to what the destination retail is?
When the ink is dry, I will be happy to share that, absolutely. And I'll come on your show.
But is it pretty much a done deal, Jerry? Are there a couple of things to be ironed out?
I think in retail, there's always room for things to not happen, so we hedge those bets a little bit, but I think this is a pretty sure thing.
And then you say entertainment venue as well. I guess you have an idea on that too.
That is correct. Yeah. And those are the types of things that mall properties and retail properties try to attract. You want people to come. You want to have a reason to draw visitors to your property, because that's when they're going to spend their money, while they're having a good time, having a cocktail or two, and enjoying time with family. And so retail properties, as they redevelop, they all want to attract one of these, one of these types of concepts.
And you're going to have high-end apartments in that as well?
And those apartments are already online. To the rear of Clearview Mall, you've had a couple of hundred units come online, new high-end apartments.
So tell me about the go ahead.
I was going to say that's very similar to what's taking place in Elmwood Shopping Center right now. Elmwood.
Well, let me pick that up when we come back. Okay. All right, let me take a break. We'll talk about Elmwood when we come back. 651, 9 till 7. We're at People's Health, 3017 Vets. It's Medicare Open Enrollment Day. We got donuts for you from Joe's Donuts, joeknowsfood.com. We got breakfast, we got coffee, we got free World War II museum tickets, we got tickets to Oktoberfest and more while they last. Plus, we've got some expert advice on Medicare open enrollment, which is the most important part of it all. Traffic now, WWL. Get away from that Bismarck and save that jelly as well for Jerry Bologna. We got Joe's Cafe Donuts here at People's Health, 3017 Vets. We got hot breakfast, fresh donuts, home cooking made daily. Stop or visit joesknowsfood.com. We're at People's Health, 3017 Vets in Metairie. We'll be here all day long. Come on out. It's the first day of Medicare open enrollment. Jerry, did you know that a Bismarck is a donut or not?
I'm aware.
You do, what type of donut is it? Let's see if you know. What type of donut?
No, I want to talk about my favorite, the shoe sole.
Okay, all right, we can do that if you like. I don't know if they have any of those over there, but a Bismarck is a chocolate-covered donut filled with cream. Let's talk about Elmwood Shopping Center. Tell me what's going on there.
They continue to raise their profile, bringing in high-end tenants. They recently announced Nordstrom Rack is going to be going where the old Big Lots was, so that's quite a step up in terms of retailers.
You broke up a little bit, Jerry. Who is it that's coming in?
Nordstrom
Rack, you said? Okay. Yeah,
Nordstrom Rack is coming in where the Big Lots store was, so that's quite an elevation in terms of tenants and the profile of shopping that's taking place there. You also have a totally new apartment complex, luxury 251 luxury apartments that are going to be built at the site of the old Kmart. So Elmwood continues to evolve into a residential destination as well, a residential and shopping destination. And, you know, we've been working on this More Here campaign in Jefferson. You can build more, invest more, and we certainly say people can shop more and spend more here in Jefferson Parish.
Y'all have really done a lot in Jefferson Parish. Things are really, you know, I hate to say on fire. I don't want to use that phrase, but things are happening in Jefferson Parish, are they not?
Sure, and it doesn't happen in a vacuum. We have great government leadership, great civic involvement, and our residents get good quality of life offerings, and we just try to maintain those things.
Any final thoughts, Jerry?
Come celebrate, support our retailers and support our companies. We're excited about the future.
I remember what you said. You could tell the people about the new retail thing on my show. So you said you'd do it. Remember?
I'll do it. Okay.
We're holding you to it. All right. Thank you, Jerry. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Cokie. You too, sir. Cokie Riley, LSU beat writer for The Advocate, about LSU getting ready to take on a ranked Vanderbilt team. Then we'll talk to Ronald Surpass about crime and take a deep dive as we normally do. Thank you for joining us. This is Medicare Enrollment Day, People's Health Medicare Center and Vets near Causeway. Yep, 716 out to People's Health Center. Stop by. We got some Joe's Cafe donuts for you. It's a great day at Joe's Cafe. Hot breakfast, fresh donuts, home cooking made daily. Stop by or visit joesknowsfood.com. It's Medicare Open Enrollment Day, and we're going to be here at 3017 Vets in Metairie all day long. All the way through Scoot, they got people sitting around waiting to help you with your Medicare open enrollment or just to answer any questions you have about Medicare. And I do know this, if my memory serves me properly, you do have to, when you age into Medicare, there is something active that you have to do. You can't just ignore it because, again, if I remember this correctly, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you could face a penalty that lasts for the rest of your life, and you don't want that to happen. Cokie Riley joins us now, our friend, to talk about LSU football. He, of course, the LSU beat writer for The Advocate. How you doing, Cokie?
Doing well. How's it going?
Everything's going well. Tell me about LSU's running game.
Yeah, it was definitely improved this past week. 166 rushing yards on 30 attempts. Good for, you know, five and a half yards a pop. They got some explosive runs on the ground. They got the 56-yard run from Jawan Johnson. That was a season high. It was just a very, very efficient day. It was a pretty efficient day for LSU's run game, and I think that definitely helped out Garrett Nussmeier in the offense.
Tell me about Garrett Nussmeier and his health as far as we know.
Yeah, I thought he looked a lot healthier this week. Nussmeier, of course, been working through an abdomen injury, a slash torso injury, middle body injury.
Well, that's why I asked that, because on TV they were saying it was a hip, and then I've heard it was an abdomen. Do we know exactly what it is?
It's an abdomen slash torso sort of injury where it effectively affected the way he could turn and drive the football through his middle half. And I think you saw a much healthier Nussmeier this past week, and I think that was probably the most important takeaway from this past week's game, because, yes, there were some mistakes through the two interceptions he threw, but he was throwing the ball with much better velocity. He was moving around much better. He ran and scrambled for some yards. He was also dealing with an ankle injury. But it seemed like he could deal with that much easier than what was going on with his abdomen.
Tell me about the LSU defensive backs. Boy, they had a good night.
Yeah, absolutely. South Carolina only completed one pass of more than 10 air yards, I believe, if I'm remembering that correctly. PJ Woodland played very well. Mansoor Dean had the massive pass breakup toward the end of the game. Dean has really been arguably the best cornerback in the country. He's been absolutely lights out, good for them. Again, the secondary has been really, really good this season. Tamarcus Cooley, the safety, had the interception. DJ Pickett stepped up and played really well as a true freshman. The secondary is easily the best secondary they've had under Brian Kelly, and it's light years better than what they had 2 years ago when they had trouble stopping anybody.
How about the receiving core?
Yeah, Aaron Anderson was hurt, so they needed someone to step up, and that guy ended up being Tre'Davious Green, the former basketball star, high school basketball star, and former LSU basketball player. And you can kind of see those basketball skills on display with that touchdown where he just kind of goes up for the rebound, right, with that jump ball. And he had some explosive plays. I think he had four catches that went for at least 11 yards. And he was absolutely massive. He's a big 6'7" frame, really good athlete, can move in space. He really saw on that display, he catches for 119 yards.
You think they underused him? Because I don't know how you defend him. I really don't.
Yeah, I think part of it this season at least, well, there's a couple of things. Well, one, there was some of the blocking issues that he had at least last season and a little bit this year as well, where he had sort of trouble getting low and getting underneath guys' pads and being an effective blocker, which is an important part of just playing that tight end position, right? Because when you're in the game, you don't want to be predictable that they're going to pass it, right? So that's part of it. And a lot of, but for this season, I think a lot of it is just the injury that he suffered in week two against Louisiana Tech, where he had that MCL sprain, and he's still not 100% from that injury. He said after the game the other night that his knee's only at 80%. So he had an 8-catch, 119-yard performance despite his knee only being at 80%. Tells you how talented that guy is, really.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I wanted to get back to with Nussmeier was his ankle, because you kept seeing him. We kept seeing him limp a lot on and off the field. Do you know if that's an ongoing thing or not, or was it a one-off?
It's something that he was dealing with during the game and suffered during the game. At least that's what Brian Kelly indicated. It's not like a high ankle sprain or anything. It's remedial, so there's nothing major about it. And he should be fine moving forward. But I think you could see this week, he could play through it a lot easier because, again, like he was just driving the ball with the sort of velocity and fervor that we just haven't seen him do this season. And it seemed like he could still make plays and drive those balls off his foot despite, you know, kind of having that very mild ankle injury.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We're talking about LSU. We'll look at Vanderbilt when we return. We are live. It's Medicare Enrollment Day. We're at People's Health Medicare Center on Vets near Causeway. If you have any questions, Medicare experts are going to be here all day to help. I'm here till 10. Newell will be here from 10 to 1 and Scoot from 1 to 4. We will be right back on WWL 722 Traffic Now. 727 Tommy Tucker, WWL, live on location, People's Health Center, 3017 Vets in Metairie. Come on out, see us. LSU taking on Vanderbilt, an early game. How you feel about that early game, Cokie? I'm not nuts about that.
Yeah, I don't absolutely love it either, but I guess it prevents me from staying up till, you know, 2 a.m. So I guess there is
to your article, yeah.
To it. Yeah, yeah.
I should tell people we're talking to Cokie Riley, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. How do you think LSU is going to adjust to it? And tell me about your concerns going into Vanderbilt to take on, is it Diego Pava? Is that how you say his name?
Diego Pavia, yeah. He's a
Pavia.
Feisty, mobile quarterback, really tough kid. They kind of run this unique offense where it's kind of like a triple option, but there's a pretty strong passing attack that goes along with it. Their tight end, Eli Stowers, is one of the best tight ends in the country. So it's a tricky, unique offense, and they have a quarterback who can really execute that offense. And I mean, they beat Alabama with it last year, so and they're ranked this season, as you can see from the record. This is a very dangerous team that they can't take for granted at all. And as for the early starts, Brian Kelly said they're going to practice early on, I want to say Wednesday and Thursday. I think that's meant to sort of help with the early start.
What matchup has you concerned most?
I think when you're talking about Vanderbilt, it's just the way that their, you know, tricky offense runs, and you just have to be very disciplined with where the football is at all times. And again, sort of that triple option threat that I was sort of talking about, where Pavia can run. You have Cedric Alexander, the running back, who's pretty talented. You have a really veteran offensive line. This is a very veteran team. They know exactly what they're doing. It's tons of seniors and returning starters. So if you're not disciplined in your approach, they can really get to you. And, you know, if LSU is a little too eager or a little too aggressive, they can definitely get burned by that.
Thank you, Cokie. Appreciate your time. Cokie Riley, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. We are at People's Health on Medicare Open Enrollment Day. I think Diego Pavia would qualify for open enrollment. He's 24, petitioning to be in college more, stay more in college, and play more college football. We'll take a break, come back right now. Time for WWL First News. Come on over. We got some donuts for you from Joe's Cafe. It's a great day at Joe's Cafe. Hot breakfast, fresh donuts, home cooking made daily. Stop by or visit joeknowsfood.com. We got free World War II tickets. Jerry Bologna, stop by. We got the CEO of Jedco here, and they'll help you with any Medicare questions that you have, because today is the first day of open enrollment. Not that Ron O'Surpass is even close to that, but when he does get close to it, he'll probably come over and have some questions answered. How you doing, Ronald?
I'm doing pretty good. I might be over there for the donuts.
Well, come on over. Yeah, well, that would figure.
You see what I did there, right? Ops, donuts, you know.
Yeah, I did. Opposite. Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice of Loyola, former NOPD chief, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, came up pounding a beat, riding a horse. Did you ride a motorcycle too or not?
I did. I rode a motorcycle for a couple of years.
I thought you did.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So tell me about, I want to go back to this Derrick Groves capture a little bit, if I might, and take me through the anatomy of that and what kind of interagency cooperation had to take place for something like that to occur.
The relationship with the United States Marshal Service can never be underestimated in these types of things. It's called unlawful flight to avoid prosecution. And United Marshals have a tremendous network of information, a tremendous network of technology, and great working relationships with law enforcement throughout the United States of America. And I would give a big tip of the hat to the NOPD for continuing to push the case, and for the U.S. Marshals being able to spread it across the country to look for him.
Let's talk about the election and the new mayor and the right size for the police department. I know you keep talking about that, and I don't mean in a negative way at all, but mm-hmm. It is important when it comes to budgeting and everything else about what's the right size for the police department, right?
Well, true, and there's a benefit to knowing from independent experts what should the number be. There's a political risk of having a number established, because then it can't be wishy-washy. One year we could say 1,200 because we only got money for 1,300, you know, those kinds of things. But, you know, the bigger question mm-hmm. is, are we to believe that the city council was really asleep at the switch and are saying publicly that they did not know the mayor may have overspent the budget by $100 million. Is there anybody in the universe who believes that the city council was not paying attention, has their own budget staff? So this notion that we're suddenly in a crisis of $100 million that could very well affect the public safety budget, then we must be asking serious questions about what they're doing all year.
So what exactly, Chief, are you saying? Somebody should have noticed this earlier?
Well, all I know is when I was doing the budget for the NOPD, the city council had its own staff that excoriated us every month to make sure we were spending money they have allocated in a way that was consistent with their plan. So if we're talking about public safety, if we're talking about the police department's proper staffing, and we're talking about nearly a $100 million hole in the 2025 budget, those three things are not going to line up if people don't know what's in the budget from day one to the end of the year.
When you were superintendent, take me through how that works, the whole budgeting process, because we're kind of getting in the weeds here. But again, that's, as I say, if you play golf, that's where all the cheating goes on. Most of the cheating goes on in the weeds, right? So take me through the process. Yeah. You're the head of NOPD. Tell me what the budgeting process is, and throughout the year, who's keeping an eye on what?
I'll tell you, it was the same thing in Nashville, Washington State, and New Orleans. The mayor or the governor creates a budget. It goes to the council or the legislature. They pass it. Then the mayor and the department heads are responsible for staying within budget. It is the council that authorizes how much money each department gets. So they have a necessary legal responsibility to oversee. All the years I was chief of police, and then most of the years I was the deputy chief, we had to report to the budget committee of the council every month on where we were, expenditures, revenues, and what we were going to be at the end of the year within budget. This is nothing new. This is as old as the sun coming up every morning that the legislative branch, in this case the council, oversees the approval of the funding it gave to the executive branch. This is like civics. You know, you took this in civics in seventh grade.
So you're saying that throughout all of last year, the different departments would have been reporting to the council, or the council should have had an eye on how much are you staying within your budget for the month, or are you overspending for the month, et cetera, right? And projecting into future months?
That's the way it was everywhere. I was a deputy chief or a chief, so there would have been some massive change if the city did not do that after I retired. And I would be surprised, or it would be a great explanation to say, well, all those years you would watch the department's budgets very carefully, why didn't you this year? If that's the case.
Well, if what's the case?
That they did away with that very old practice of having to go to the legislature, which approves your funding on a recurring basis, no less than quarterly, and saying, this is how much we had to spend so far, this is how much we spent, we need help, or we're on target.
Well, we're going to have J.P. Morrell on at 8:45, and I'll ask him that exact question. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back 7:51, 9 till 8. We're live at the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets. Come on over. You can get whatever questions you have about Medicare answered. You can enjoy some free food from Joe's Cafe. We got free World War II tickets while they last, free Oktoberfest tickets while they last. Right now, we'll look at traffic on WWL. 7:57, Tommy Tucker, WWL, here at People's Health, 3017 Vets in Metairie, talking to Ronald Surpass, former head of the NOPD, and he's now a professor of criminal justice at Loyola. I'm just trying to understand this budgeting thing. So people understand, Chief, when you were the head of the department, every month you would have to go to the council and explain to them, are you within the budget? Are you exceeding it? Are you behind? For example, if something like the January 1st attack happened, or maybe the Super Bowl revenues didn't come through, or you weren't. Tell me how that works.
Absolutely. It was either monthly or quarterly. And as governments got tight with budgeting, it would definitely become monthly. Our budget staff, the chief administrative officer's budget staff, and the council's budget staff were in regular communication daily on how much money did we give the city, how much is the city spent, and as the council, we're ultimately responsible for making sure the money we authorize has been spent properly. So the point is this, in the Washington state government, in the Nashville government, and in the New Orleans government twice in my career, there was a regular recurring meeting between everybody every month or quarter to say, are we on target? So today or yesterday, the news was we may be $100 million off, and there was a lot of gnashing of the teeth about how bad this is and how could it have happened. And my question is, maybe things changed after I left, Tommy. Maybe they don't do the budget meetings every month or every quarter anymore. Otherwise, how do you get this far and not know?
Well, we're going to ask J.P. Moreau when he comes on later on about every month, every quarter. I guarantee you that. Real quick, I wanted to – I saw a story in a paper about a young lady that was hit by somebody passing a school bus in a school zone with the amber lights flashing. And tell me about the – about the importance, if you will, Chief, about traffic enforcement and how it's not just about traffic, but it can lead to cutting crime in other ways as well?
Absolutely. Traffic enforcement was the number one complaint I received all three places where I was chief. Traffic enforcement affects the quality of life of every citizen every day. Protecting children in school zones has got to be one of the highest callings of the government. And let me tell you something, Tommy. Everybody can drive 10 feet down the street and see someone that they wish the police had pulled over and educated them about their driving behavior. Or we find when we do traffic stops, people have guns, people have dope, warrants, people are running away from the law. Traffic enforcement, constitutionally done, does reduce collisions, does reduce accidents with injuries, and it does help find criminals. That's a known fact.
Seems like the best bang for the buck sometimes police work when it comes to traffic enforcement, huh?
Well, it is, and that's why you have to have a very well-done, independent analysis of how many cops you need so you can say to the police officers, hey, we have time to do traffic enforcement. The citizens want it, and we need it. But we can't do that until we know how many cops we need overall.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it. We're at People's Health. We'll talk to Dr. B when we come back on WWL. Good to have the band back together. Dr. B here live. Whether you're newly eligible or you've had Medicare for years, there's a lot to learn about the program. Dr. B, good to see you. How you been?
Yeah, great to see you, Tommy. I've been doing well.
Nice to see a picture of those boxers as well. Tell us about People's Health.
Yeah, so People's Health is it's a company that offers Medicare Advantage plans here in Louisiana. And really our goal is to help people understand and enjoy their Medicare and all the benefits that are possible with those rich plans that we develop that really try to focus on access to medical care.
I don't know if y'all change it or not, but every year when we come to 3017 Vets, it seems to get nicer and nicer and nicer. Do y'all change things?
Yeah, they do. They've decorated quite a bit, and it looks fantastic in here. I hadn't been here in a couple of months, and it looks great.
Let's talk about Medicare. What is it?
Yeah, so Medicare is the federal health insurance program, and it's designed for people that are ages 65 and older. But it is also available to people under 65 if you've got certain types of disabilities or if you've got end-stage renal or kidney disease. That's really the last stage of kidney disease.
And what else do we need to know about Medicare?
So Medicare is individual health insurance. So what that means is it doesn't cover your spouse. It's not going to cover any of your dependents. So it's different from all those employer-funded health plans. And the other big difference about Medicare is that it has four separate and distinct parts, and we call them by letters, Part A, B, C, and D. And each covers different services and has different costs associated.
Now, you're a physician. You probably just noticed my eyes glaze over.
Yes.
It happens. Let's talk about Medicare Part A. What is that?
It's hard to make it exciting.
But
it is important.
It is important because you have to make an active decision when you age in, right?
Exactly.
You can't just let it go.
No. You've got to be very proactive in this, and it is very confusing. That's why it's important.
So let's start with Part A. Dig in.
Yeah, so Part A covers, basically, the way I think about it, it covers facilities. So it covers hospital care and skilled nursing facility care. It sometimes will cover some home health services as well. So if you and your spouse have paid Medicare taxes for while you're working and everything, you do not have a monthly premium with Part A, but you may have a deductible or a cost sharing for certain services. So if you go into the hospital, you may have some cost sharing.
What is Part B?
So part B, I think about kind of all the other stuff outside of facilities. So that's your medical insurance. It's going to cover visits to your doctor, outpatient care and procedures and services like preventative care, things that are so important like your flu shots and screenings, all those diagnostic tests like blood work and x-rays and EKGs. And then it covers a lot of durable medical equipment. That's things like wheelchairs, walkers, hospital beds. And you have to remember, if you enroll in Part B and you do need to actively enroll in it, you do pay a monthly premium for that that's usually deducted out of your Social Security check.
So we've done A and B. What about C, Part C?
So Part C is actually Medicare Advantage plans. So that's the terminology for Medicare Advantage. And that's another option for getting your medical coverage. And so while original or traditional Medicare is offered by the federal government, the Medicare Advantage plans are offered by private insurance companies like People's Health. And those plans have to follow all of those Medicare rules, and they have to cover all the services of original Medicare.
So if you join People's Health or a Medicare Advantage plan, do you still have Medicare?
You absolutely do. And a lot of people don't understand that. You also have all the rights and protections that come along with Medicare, but your Medicare Advantage plan is going to provide the actual coverage for those healthcare services and often all of your prescription drugs as well. And so at the doctor's office or if you go to the pharmacy, instead of showing your red, white, and blue Medicare card, you need to show your health plan ID card.
All right, now what about Medicare Part D?
So we'll bring it home with Part D.
Bring it home.
So Part D, D is for drugs, okay? So that's your prescription drug coverage. And you have to remember, drug coverage is not available through original Medicare. You have to get either a standalone Part D plan that's going to cover your drugs, or a lot of Medicare Advantage plans include Part D in it. And those plans generally are required to cover the prescription drugs that are most commonly prescribed for people with Medicare. And they also cover things like vaccines.
And besides drug coverage, how else are original Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans different?
So original Medicare allows you to go to any doctor or hospital that takes Medicare. So that's anywhere in the United States. Medicare Advantage plans often have a little bit more narrow network. They may be state-based, they may be community-based, and they may have a network of providers or healthcare facilities that are considered in-network. Medicare Advantage plans may also require referrals for specialty visits and often require prior authorization for some medical services and maybe even those drugs that you're taking. Mm-hmm. And so prior authorizations just mean that you need to get it approved from your health plan before you go and pick something up, because that guarantees that it's going to be paid for. Original Medicare doesn't require referrals or prior authorizations.
So what about services? Do original Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans cover different services?
Sometimes they do, but I think the really important thing to remember is that Medicare Advantage plans have to cover everything that original Medicare does. So you basically, that's the baseline. You get everything in original Medicare, but then the Medicare Advantage plans might offer some additional benefits. And that could be things like routine eye care and even eyeglasses, hearing aids, hearing exams, a fitness center membership. They may offer transportation and even an over-the-counter credit benefit. And those are things that Medicare itself does not offer.
I would think people may think that Medicare Advantage is more expensive than original Medicare, but not necessarily, right?
Yeah, not necessarily. Even though you get some of those additional benefits, because it is managed, they often do not cost as much as you may be paying for your Medicare. So your overall cost is what you need to think about. It's not just what you pay on a monthly basis. You have to think about the co-pays and the cost sharing and stuff like that. Medicare Advantage plans, another big point people may not understand is that they are required to limit your yearly out-of-pocket cost. And what that means is you can set a budget based on what the maximum is. Once you hit that maximum, you don't pay anything else, and that's not true with Medicare.
So to be clear, the extra benefits do not make Medicare Advantage more expensive?
No. The benefits might provide that extra value to you. So, you know, an example here in Louisiana, the average cost of a dental exam, a routine dental exam, and that's going to include your x-rays and stuff, is about $220. If you have original Medicare, it's not going to cover any of those dental services because it doesn't cover dental at all. So you're going to have to pay that out of pocket. But if your Medicare Advantage plan has dental coverage, you won't have to pay that full amount. And often you don't have to pay anything at all because it's included. And you have to think about those savings that may add up compared to original Medicare.
Because all Medicare Advantage plans do not have the same costs.
Exactly, exactly. Each Medicare Advantage plan has different cost. Some plans may have a monthly premium that's in addition to the Part B premium that you have to pay the government. Others may have an annual deductible for medical services or your prescription drugs. That means you may have to pay out of pocket before the insurance kicks in. And then they may have other costs for cover services, things like co-payments and co-insurances for seeing your doctors.
And why is that?
So Medicare Advantage plans typically have a copay. So what that means is it's a fixed dollar amount that you're going to have to pay. So if you go see a cardiologist, for example, it may be $30 with one of the Medicare Advantage plans. And you have to make sure that that you understand what your costs are going to be when you kind of calculate all the doctors that you need to see as well. So those are out-of-pocket costs.
So you're a medical doctor and you understand all of this. My goodness, your brain must be the size of a basketball. 8:22, we'll take a quick break. We come back, we'll talk about give you some advice for listeners who have to make Medicare coverage decisions. We're live at the People's Health Medicare Center. Dr. B, our guest, 8:23, traffic now, WWL. All right, 8:27, Tommy Tucker back with Dr. B at the Medicare Center, People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets. We're talking about on this first day of open enrollment. Doc, what is some advice you have for listeners who are making Medicare coverage decisions?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is people should know Medicare plans are not one size fits all. You really need to do a little bit of research, understand what your needs are, and even maybe jot down a list of questions that you have, because like we were saying before, this is very confusing.
It can be.
Yeah.
And what do you do next?
You know, I mean, what one thing that's really good is to talk to a Medicare expert. It's actually why we built the center. Gives you the opportunity to come in, sit down with somebody, and ask all those questions you have. Ask them how you can save on your Medicare cost as well. You know, I found this out with my family. There are a lot of programs you don't realize that exist, and it can save you a huge amount of money, especially on prescription drugs.
What I think what y'all do here that's so good is it's, you know, I was trying to help a neighbor go through it online. It's one thing. But then to have somebody sit down with you and say, no, 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 it's this, not that.
Exactly.
It's that, not this, because it can be misleading. How do you choose a Medicare Advantage plan that's right for you?
Yeah, there's a ton of different Medicare Advantage plans. If you go to Medicare.org or Medicare.gov and take a look at them, there's probably, you know, 20 on there. So you do want to look at a couple of different things. You want to check what the costs are and what the costs specifically for you are going to be. You definitely want to look at the coverage and make sure that everything that you need is going to be covered. And then you want to look at those extra benefits we talked about, things like dental and vision, and make sure they're things you're going to use. You don't want to pay for something that you're never going to actually use.
Some other things to do?
Yeah, so look at the plan's network. That's really important. If you've got a doctor you've been seeing for dozens of years, you don't want to have to switch.
Like Dr.
Right?
B, for example.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be able to come and see me. And so you got to review the plans and make sure they cover what you need and everything. You also want to look and see if there are any special plans that may save you more money. That sometimes there are plans that are designed for people that have diabetes or cardiovascular disease, and that can actually give you extra benefits and extra value from that plan you're going to choose. And then the other thing is, you know, word of mouth is huge. So talk to your friends, talk to people you know, find out what they have and what their experience is. That goes a long way.
Why is it now the time to learn about Medicare Advantage?
So this is kind of the season right now. It starts on October 15th and goes all the way to December 7th. This is the open enrollment period. So this is the one time of year where everybody can actually review their plan, decide what they want, and make a selection, and it'll become effective on January 1st.
Is this the only time you can make coverage changes?
In general, this is the main time to make changes. There are a few exceptions if you've had a life change, if you've left an employer, for example, or maybe you've moved to a new location, then that's an opportunity where you may be able to switch.
What about timelines and final advice?
Yeah, so this is really big, is don't wait until December 7th. You want to make sure you have enough time to do the research and you know what you're getting into. This is something you're committing to for the next year. You won't have another opportunity to change most likely until next open enrollment. So make sure you talk to people about what you should really be doing and that it's something that fits you.
And if you age in, again, going back to the proactive nature of this, I'm a minute late here, but I think this is very important. You need to take the action that you need to take, because otherwise you could set yourself up for penalties that you have to pay for the rest of your life. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really important, if you're about to turn 65 and become eligible, start the conversations a couple of months
before. Do not ignore it.
Don't ignore it. Yeah, because if you choose not to go into anything, then for every month that you don't go into it and you decide to later, you may get a penalty.
And you'll be paying that for the rest of your life.
Exactly. So exactly. Sure, really important.
All right, well, they're going to have a seminar today at 10 o'clock, another one at 1. Absolutely free. People's Health 3017 Vets in Metairie. Come on out and see us. Dr. B, a pleasure as always. We'll talk to you again soon. Right now, we pause for news on WWL. At 8:46, 14 till 9, we're going to be here through 4 o'clock. Scoot will be at least. Newell takes over at 10. J.P. Morrell joins us now, New Orleans City Council member at large. Congratulations, J.P., on the victory.
Thank you.
Hey, let's talk about this budget thing, because I had Ronald Surpass earlier, and he was saying, I'm confused as to how the whole thing works. When did you guys become aware of this budget shortage or the deficit or what, however you want to say it? And this is about fiscal year 25 or 26. What do we take me through this, please?
The deficit's fiscal year 24. It's actually last year. Well, sorry, 25. Okay. The budget that ended, we did the 25 budget at the end of 24. We were made aware of the deficit when the mayor backed out of the school board deal, saying that we had a budget shortfall, and it was fully revealed at the February meeting, where we had the meeting regarding how and why the mayor had unwound the school board settlement. I didn't get
so
to
you've
hear
known
your
about
show.
This for a well, but that's okay. Well, you've known about this for a long time, almost. Right.
We were told in February, because at the time in February when the meeting was revealed, the CAO said, it's fine, we're going to figure out. And the CFO said, it's the apocalypse. We began our process of trying to cut more spending, which was for us dealing mostly with travel and with not approving additional positions. What came out over the course of months, as we continually, particularly Joe DeRusso, hammered the CAO, because cuts are done typically, Tommy, by the executive branch. Once the council passes the budget, under the charter, we don't have the ability to go in and make individual cuts by departments. We can withhold in individual spending, but cuts are done by governors, by presidents, and by the cutting plan is done by the executive. We continue to scroll back and not authorize new spending. The issue is, and this was really disappointing because Mr. Surpass knows better, what happened over the last couple of years is that the police department over-budgeted because they were trying to fill positions they could not fill. What we found in our analysis right now is that what they were doing is, when they didn't fill the positions, they would have overtime, take the money from the overfilled positions and backfill the overtime. What happened last year with CAO Montano for 2025, he no longer budgeted for the positions they were never going to fill. So the department didn't have a cushion anymore, and it continued to overspend on overtime with no cushion. Now, mind you, we knew in February that there was a deficit, largely because we had some under collection that came out in revenue estimate because Taylor Swift did not Taylor Swift like we thought she would, but B, because there was the terrorist attack on January 1st and overtime spending had gone up. Now, mind you, what we didn't know at that time till February was, back to Taylor Swift, they've been overspending on overtime. Here's the real big question we have today. Even in February, when we were aware there was an issue, the administration didn't curb overtime spending by NOPD, which is why the deficits continue to grow. So the issue is, there is definitively a spending problem in the administration when it comes to police overtime that they have not curbed. They did not curb that until Joe Threat came in as the new CAO and said, hold up, we're curbing spending. As you recall, in February, when I asked the CFO whether or not we should go into austerity, and she said we should, that is when I froze all spending on travel, and the administration sued us to reopen it. So we've been aware of the deficit since February. We were told by the CAO that it could be absorbed through cuts and through reduced spending. However, as time went on and as Councilmember Geruso dug in more and more into it, we realized two things. One, they were not curbing spending. And two, they had no plan for cuts, which is why, fast forwarding to now, we have been working on our own cut plan because the administration never produced one.
So when you find out that there's, and I'm just trying to understand the way all this works, because I'm no J.P. Moreau, right? So when you find out in February that there is a deficit, then you can withhold money or you can't because it's already budgeted. What can a council do?
What the council can do is, for example, when the administration kept asking for additional positions, Councilman Geruso stopped moving them forward to a vote because we didn't have a plan on how to address the deficit. What we were told repeatedly at meetings with Mr. Montano was, we have an internal plan. This will not result in a reduction of services or reduction of positions. So what we did from our part is that when they asked for new money to be spent, the budget committee said, nope, we're going to pause till we...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your plan. They never produced a plan. The other thing we did is we froze travel because, Tommy, what the first thing you do when you can't pay your bills at home is not go to Disney World.
Yeah, it's true. Ideally. Let me take a break, JP. We're going to pick it up. We come back here because I want to talk about what happened yesterday. I want to talk about this pending audit, okay?
Alrighty.
All right, 852, 8 till 9, J.P. Morrell, our guest. We're live at the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets. Come on out. It's the first day of open enrollment. Right now we pause for traffic on WWL. All right, 857, real quick, back to J.P. Morrell, Tommy Tucker, WWL. J.P., I want to move on to short-term rentals, but the budget hearings continue. This is Mayor Cantrell's budget. Mayor Moreno takes over in January. So what happens if you guys, I mean, you, if the mayor doesn't like the budget, you approve the current mayor, how does that affect the future mayor?
Well, first off, so the budget has to be done in concert. The budget for next year has to be done in concert with the current council and the current mayor, but it will be the budget that the next mayor inherits. So the first step we're doing simultaneously is trying to create next year's budget, which will have 200 million less in federal spending, and it will have 20 million less in revenue. So it's going to be a budget that operates with a minimum of a $20 million structural deficit with 200 million in lesser federal spending. So Mayor Moreno will inherit a budget with a deficit versus Mayor Cantrell, who inherited a budget with a surplus. As far as the 2025 budget, we have to resolve the 2025 budget simultaneously because we have to balance 2025 so that deficit doesn't carry over to 2026. So we're kind of doing both things simultaneously, which is
all right. Let me talk to you about short-term rentals.
Okay.
No, tell me about short-term rentals. What's going on?
We had a recent hearing on our first case that was filed, the 2019 short-term rental regs. It was a follow-up. It's called Hignell. It was the Fifth Circuit. We won almost everything. The only thing that changed, which is going to be challenging, is that we had only allowed people who are natural persons to be allowed to pull a short-term rental permit. One key area where the short-term rental Airbnb proponents won is that we cannot block LLCs and corporations from applying for short-term rental permits. That's a minor loss because all the caps we have in place and platform accountability that control the number of short-term rentals are all upheld and in place. But it means that in the future, when people are applying to the lottery potentially to get a short-term rental permit, people will be competing against LLCs and corporations for those few short-term rental permits.
We are here at the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets in Metairie. It is Medicare Enrollment Day. I'm going to be here for another hour, and then Newell comes in, and then Scoot comes in to take it to 4 o'clock. The goal, make your life easy. If you need to make a decision about Medicare, and if you're aging into Medicare, you do need to make a decision one way or the other for yourself or someone you love. Come on out and see us. Medicare experts will be on hand to help you make an informed decision. People's Health experts are going to host educational seminars coming up at 10 o'clock and another one at 1. We got coffee and donuts in the morning from Joe's Cafe and Donuts. We got World War II tickets. We got Oktoberfest tickets while supplies last. And you can take the confusion out of your Medicare decision. Newell and Scoot coming up after me. Medicare Enrollment Day today through 4 o'clock at People's Health Medicare Center on Vets near Causeway. And right here on WWL, we've met some nice people already. Some people have gotten some great advice already, and you got plenty of time to take advantage of that. With that, we welcome in Matthew Willard, newly elected New Orleans City Council member at large. How you doing, Matthew?
Good morning, Tommy. Thank you for having me on.
Congratulations on the victory.
Thank you. Thank you. Exciting day for the city of New Orleans. I'm optimistic about our city's future. Certainly have some tough roads ahead, looking at this budget deficit. But I think we have a good leadership team in place, and I look forward to working with my new colleagues.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about this whole budget thing. And I know you don't have a hand in it now, but I'm trying to get a handle on, the fact that Mayor-elect Moreno is going to be sworn in January, and the fact that this is Mayor Cantrell's budget, and I understand the legalities of this, but it would seem to me the fact that you have the mayor-elect on a council now and a council person at large, and the majority of the council wants to do the right thing and deal with the budget in an appropriate way and in a responsible way, it would seem as though politically, I don't know if I'm getting into legal trouble here, but politically it would make every bit of sense, hang on a second now, to shade this budget in a way that Mayor Moreno would like to see it shaped, and Mayor-elect Moreno would like to see it shaped, because she's going to have to deal with it, as will the future council. And along those lines, as I understand the process, if the council passes a budget, say, that would be Mayor Moreno friendly, let's put it that way, okay? Mm-hmm. Not to favor her or anything, but in a way that would make it easier for her to govern. Well, then if the mayor refused to sign it, then legally the council could, if they had the votes, override it. Is that right? And then pass the budget that they would see fit?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Do I got that right?
Yes, you have. Okay. You hit the nail on the head. That's exactly how it will work. I'm hopeful that the outgoing mayor and her team can work well with the council to put forward a responsible budget that protects and prioritizes the essentials in the city right now.
In what universe do you think that's going to happen?
Look, Tommy, I really am optimistic. And the thing we can't forget is that the majority of those council members are coming back. So if a non-responsible budget is passed, we'll still have to deal with it next year. So
no, I'm talking about the mayors, what I'm talking about, that the mayor is going to the current mayor is going to go along with this. Come on, Matthew.
Let's go out on a good foot, okay. Put forward. It's tough decisions regardless, Tommy. I mean, you're going to have to make
because you're going to have to deal with this, Matthew. The reason I
Correct.
Bring it up is that you're going to have to deal with this, and the new council is going to have to deal with this. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, just optimistic, because either way you have to make those cuts, and that's never an easy situation. And so when you make those cuts, you try to do the least amount of harm, and you still try to protect the essential services that need funding to make sure that the city of New Orleans can continue to operate. Now, when you're looking at $100 million, possibly $200 million in cuts, it's going to hurt regardless of where it comes from. And so I'm hoping that everybody can sit down after the testimony from the various departments and put forward the best budget that you can in light of a $100 to $200 million deficit.
Now, you don't have a say in this now, but what would you Correct. Like to see done?
Well, for just what we were talking about.
You do have some opinions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the city services need to be protected to the best extent possible. We need to have funding in there for road crews to do pothole repairs and replace street lights, and you still have to make payroll. I know Mayor-elect Moreno was talking about potentially eliminating some positions, and that's probably feasible. That's probably something that you can do if you do it in a calculated way to where the harm isn't felt that great. It's one of those situations where you really have to get under the hood and analyze everything carefully and say, do we get the bang for our buck here? And if we don't, is this somewhere where we want to cut or reallocate source funding or even merge kind of responsibilities? And so you really have to be strategic and kind of go in there with a scalpel when you're trying to cut that much money out of a budget.
But I'm getting texts here that are saying, wait a minute, streetlights aren't being repaired now, streets aren't being fixed now. Where Correct. Is the low-hanging fruit, and how do you make the cuts without affecting those things, and what would you cut?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is there's funding in those areas. Whether the work gets performed or not, there's funding in those areas, and I think a lot of it goes to leadership and project management. And I think everybody, to some extent, understands that a lot of the work in City Hall is kind of checked out right now and just not being done, even when it gets funded. Mm-hmm. And so just because it's not being done right now doesn't mean necessarily that you can pull the funding away from it, because it's, obviously if it doesn't have the money, even with a new mayor and a new council coming in, it certainly cannot be done.
So what made you decide to run for city council?
Because of these issues, Tommy. You know, I've been in the state legislature for 6 years. I feel like I've done a pretty good job. I've prioritized things that are important, like inaccurate sewage and water board bills and unaffordable mm-hmm. homeowners insurance. And I just feel like we need leadership in City Hall that are going to focus on those basics and kind of right-size the ship right now, because we're a bit underwater. And so we do need people. I wish I was on the council right now to weigh in on some of these budget decisions, but we need people in there who can make these tough decisions, but also explain it to the city, right? I mean, I think something that's been missing the last few years is just that explanation, somebody going out into the community and explaining how decisions made by the administration and the city council actually impact the people in the city of New Orleans. And so
I think that's what I'm trying to, that's what I'm trying to ask you now, Matthew. I think we're having the same conversation, maybe in a little bit of a different way. So when you were campaigning, what did you hear from the people as you were running, their concerns about the city?
I'm sure it aligns with the text messages that you've been receiving, but it goes to the streetlights. You know, my streetlight's been out for over a year. Why is it still out? You know, my street is in disrepair. We were supposed to have our street repaired with the Katrina money, but it never got touched. My Nord facility doesn't have a functioning bathroom. Why are there not many job opportunities for my kid when they graduate from college? You know, it's a lot of, you know, as Joe DeRusso calls it, the blocking and tackling, the stuff that you take for granted when you go to another city. Why do we appropriate money to clean catch basins, but the catch basins don't get cleaned? Those really were the big issues. It was infrastructure, it was city services, it was jobs, and then probably behind that, it was public safety.
When it comes to priorities, what would your top three priorities be? What are the three things that have your attention, or maybe more than three?
So one of the first ones that we have to tackle is the Department of Safety and Permits. It's been an obstacle to doing business in the city of New Orleans, and it's affecting us on the revenue side, and it's affecting us on the safety side. And you're also not getting, you know, all the contractors who would typically bid for projects in the city of New Orleans because they don't want to deal with safety and permits. So that's one of the biggest things that need to be addressed sort of first. Beyond that, I think it goes to the city services aspect of it. When you have a street light out, Tommy, you call and report it to 311, but then nothing happens, right? And so you have to report it to 311 several times, and then you have to get somebody from the council attention to get, you know, get the street light addressed if you're lucky. And it shouldn't be that way, and it certainly does not have to be that way. A lot of that is going to tie into who Mayor-elect Moreno picks to lead her department, and sort of the changeover plan that they lay out before the council when they go through those confirmation hearings. But for me, when the money is there, the city services should be provided to the people in the city of New Orleans. It should not be like pulling teeth to have quality of life issues addressed in your neighborhoods. Safety and permits is certainly something very big that has to be addressed. So those are probably the two biggest ones that I think that the next council and the next mayor need to address within the first month or so of taking over.
I think what I'm hearing and what we're saying is it should work. It's not working. Maybe there is money there, but it's not being used right, or it's not being spent. So when we come back, we'll talk about how you turn that around, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
And I think part of it is cooperation between the mayor and the council. And I, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people, and a lot of people are very optimistic, Matthew, about the new mayor, about the council coming in. Not that the council is fully set yet, but that they think that this is going to bring in a period of cooperation between the council and the mayor and some common sense, and things are going to get done. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Matthew Willard, council member at large elect, 921. We're at People's Health, 3017 Vets. And Metairie, come on out, see us, get ready for Medicare. Today is the first day of open enrollment. We'll be back on WWL. Matthew Willard is our guest, New Orleans City Council member-elect. Matthew, you ought to come on over because I know you're close to Medicare age, are you not?
A couple years short, Tommy, a couple years.
A little bit. No, but I was telling you before, and I'm being serious about this now, because a lot of people are very optimistic about a new start and the council and the mayor getting along and being on the same page and having the same goal of just delivering services and doing what government's supposed to do. How optimistic are you that this is going to happen?
I'm very optimistic, Tommy. I talked about it during the campaign. You know, I think we immediately improve overnight once the new mayor and the new council get sworn in, because you get to start on a fresh footing. I have a really good relationship with Mayor-elect Moreno. I have good relationships with the council members who are returning. And the problems are so vast. I'm very optimistic that we'll be able to work together to start to tackle some of these challenges for the people in the city of New Orleans.
How optimistic should people be? I mean, is it realistic to think that this is going to turn around? And does it go to the mindset of the employees at City Hall, or do the employees at City Hall, for the most part, want to do the right thing, but they've kind of been between a squat and a stand?
Well, I think the people in the city of New Orleans are our greatest asset, and I think a lot of the issues in City Hall can be stemmed from the culture, and I believe that business and organizational culture starts from the top. So when you get new energy coming in, I think everybody's a little bit excited and optimistic, you know? And so I do think there'll be new energy, new passion inside of City Hall, and that's part of the job of the new mayor and the new council, to sort of inspire them to work on behalf of the people in the city.
Do you attack this like 90 days at a time, or how do you do this?
You have to do both. You have to have sort of a three-month, 90-day plan as soon as you come in. But we also, one thing I think that's been missing from City Hall is kind of strategic long-term planning. You know, even looking at the budget, Tommy, I mean, we should be looking at 3 to 5 year budget forecast every time we go into the annual budgeting process. But also other issues like infrastructure, right? We know that our infrastructure is over a century old as it relates to drainage and sewage and waterboard. We need a comprehensive plan on how we're going to overhaul that and how long that'll take and how much money it'll take to do that, as well as the street works. You know, over the last few years, we've invested tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, into our streets. What's the plan to properly maintain them? What's the plan to address the other streets that we didn't get to touch, right? And so while you have to have a short-term plan, we also have to do some long-term planning for the city of New Orleans as well.
But if you could do that, you got to have money coming in, right?
You definitely have to have money coming in, but I also think when you do long-term planning and you can put out a comprehensive, you know, pathway forward and assign budget, you know, dollar values to it, it makes it easier when you're trying to go to the state government or the federal government and ask for help. You know, we look like we did our homework. We look like we came to do business. And I think that'll speak volumes about the leadership if we can actually go to our federal partners and our state partners with a plan that's actually been thought through.
I guess, you know, I'm thinking about the sewage and water board and it being a fragile system and how old it is. It would cost a tremendous amount of money to redo
tremendous.
It.
Tremendous. Mm-hmm.
So, barring the federal government, how big can the city get? How much can the city grow? Where are those dollars going to come from, I guess, is my question.
Well, I think that's what's tackled in the plan, right? We have to know what the most urgent issues are that need to be addressed. When the new substation that's uptown comes online, that's going to help with a lot of the outages and the boil water advisory. But we also know that some of the infrastructure is kind of sticking together with, you know, duct tape and chewing gum. So regardless of how long you wait to actually start to address it, it will have to be redone and repaired or even replaced. And so the earlier you start that planning, the better off you're going to be. And so my point is, at some point, Tommy, you have to stop kicking the can and you have to say, you know, this is the reality and this is why we need help. And I think, you know, the sooner we can put a plan together with the actual funding request, I'm not saying we'll be able to go to Washington, D.C. and walk away with $3 billion to redo, you know, our drainage infrastructure. But if we have a comprehensive plan and the first phase of that plan requires, you know, $200 million, that's a more palatable ask, or even if you only get a portion of that first phase, that's a more palatable ask. I guess what I'm trying to get us away from is saying, hey, we need $50 million for this. And then, you know, a few years later, we need $30 million for this, to where it looks like it's done in a piecemeal fashion, as opposed to a comprehensive plan that's done over a period of years and that's broken out by dollar value.
All right, October 15th, 2026, I'm talking to you, and I'm saying, Matthew, it's been 10 months now. What are you most proud of? What would you like to at least realistically have accomplished by then?
I would like to improve communication in City Hall with the departments, with the administration, and I'm talking about across departments, across the administration, across the City Council. I think 10 months is long enough to reform safety and permits to where they're no longer an obstacle to doing business in the city of New Orleans. And I think that we should see tremendous improvement with the way city services are handled in the city of New Orleans. And I think all of that is, you know, we should be able to do within a 10-month period, as well as, you know, coming up with a responsible budget in light of the $200 million deficit, to where we can still get things done in the city of New Orleans.
I don't know how it went so bad last time, but do you see anything that could possibly derail a relationship between the council and the mayor now?
You're talking the mayor about elect. the incoming council and the incoming mayor?
Yeah, the mayor-elect and the incoming council, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Tommy, there's always going to be issues that can derail a relationship. I guess my hope would be that if something like that does occur, that it would just be temporary and short-lived, right? Because at the end of the day, we all decided to run for office to help the people in the city of New Orleans. And there are a lot of ways the people of the city of New Orleans need help right now. And so if there are issues that can, you know, kind of sour a relationship, my hope would be that it would just be short-lived.
Thank you, Matthew. Any final thoughts?
No, look, I'm grateful. Thank you to the people of the city of New Orleans for entrusting me with your support. I'm excited to get to work on behalf of all of you. And hopefully the next time I come on, Tommy, we can talk about some of the positive things happening in the city.
I hope so, man. You always got an open invitation. You know that. Matthew Willard, New Orleans City Council member-elect. We're live at the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets in Metairie. Newell's coming up next. He's already on location. We're going to talk to Clancy Dubose when we come back. 936 Traffic Now, WWL. All right, 943, 17 till 10. We're live at the People's Health Medicare Center. Newell's coming up next, and then Scoot will be here all day long. It's the first day of open enrollment, and they got a free seminar coming up at 10 o'clock. You don't need an appointment. Come on in. They'll be glad to tell you everything you need to know about Medicare. Clancy Dubose joins us now, WWL Louisiana political analyst. Great job, Clancy, on Saturday night. I watched you in between the LSU game on Channel 4. Nice job.
Thank you, Tommy. I think the election was more exciting than the LSU game, but I'm glad the Tigers won. My wife and my younger son are both LSU grads, and I think you and I both went to LSUNO at one point.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
UNO, LSU,
I went to UNO, whatever it's going to wind up. Noel Norman sitting right across from you also went to UNO. Hey, let me ask you this, Clancy. I'm no Clancy Dubose, and certainly I'm no Noel Norman, but when it comes to this budget thing with the city, and I know you got legal and political here that are not necessarily on the same page, but it would seem to me, okay, LaTori Cantrell made out her budget, right? This is what I want. But it would also seem to me that you got the mayor-elect on a council at large, and you got a lot of the council returning. So it would seem to me, I don't know if this is legal or not, but the common sense thing would be, okay, LaTori, yeah, that's great, but you're not going to be here. This is what we need to deal with. So this is the budget that we're going to craft. And maybe officially or unofficially, we get Mayor-elect Moreno's input into this and also the council's, and then we'll send it back to you. But if you don't like it, you don't sign it, and then the council can override it. Am I making stuff up in my head here or not?
No, you're pretty much forecasting what's going to happen. Okay. There's the law, there's politics, and then there's reality. And the intersection of those is the reality. That is exactly what's going to happen. Helena will have let me back up a minute. Even if this were not, we were not on the cusp of a change in administration, if this were 2 years mm-hmm. ago, Dutch Morial used to have a saying, the man proposes and the Lord disposes, you know, like best laid plans of mice and men often go awry mm-hmm. or astray. But not the best laid plans, but he said, man proposes and the Lord disposes. And he was talking about the budget. He says, I submit the budget, right, but the council holds the purse strings, and they can tweak and adopt, and whatever they do, that's it. I mean, the mayor can, I don't remember if the mayor has a line item veto. I know the governor does, but anyway. Mm-hmm. But the mayor can veto the budget, and the council can override it. And this council will pass the budget that Helena Moreno feels most comfortable with. I'll put it that way. Not
that
she's going to dictate
it. That's what I thought.
But we are going to see a level of cooperation that we haven't seen for 8 years. I mean, when Mitch Landrieu was mayor, the council had a whole lot of 7-0 votes. He had a very good relationship with his council, and I say his council, the city council, I say his because that's the council he had to work with, and he had a very good relationship with them, and they respected him and trusted him, and it was, and the city got moving, you know, You know, we got to remember where we were 16 years ago. Everything had come to a halt for 4 years after Katrina, 5 years after Katrina. And so, you know, we needed a council and a mayor to work together, and that's what we need now. And I'm telling you right now, this is, I don't like to make predictions, but this is the safest prediction. They're saying the sun's going to rise in the east tomorrow. This new council is going to work very well with the mayor and vice versa, the new mayor.
And along those lines, I was asking Matthew Willard just now, looking ahead, do you see anything that would derail any of this?
Would you say any of this? You mean the budget or just the relationship between the mayor and the council?
Well, I mean, just the relationship between the mayor and the council, because it seems like...
I don't foresee anything, but, you know, stuff can always happen. But, you know, I think that you've got... When people are of are well-intentioned and have and put the city first, it's easy. It's easier than in other times. Where for the mayor and the council or the executive and the legislative to get together and do the right thing. And I think we have a council that comes in. Everybody knows it's a crisis, and in a crisis, people band together. Look, during the COVID epidemic, the council and the mayor stood together, you know, and we have a crisis for the in terms of the city and the well-being of the citizens and the quality of life here. This is as big a crisis as COVID. It's just not national. It's intensely local.
What I find, I don't know if it's ironic or what the phrase would be, although they got this big deficit looming, I find more people optimistic about the city more than have been in a long, 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 long time. You?
Yes, I believe that's true. But I think the reality of what of the kind of cuts that may be required hasn't sunk in yet. They're focusing on the election and not on the budget. When the reality of the budget sinks in, it could give Helena Moreno a fairly short honeymoon, but I think people are going to trust her. That's the reason she got elected. People know her and they trust her. And when she and the council work together on this and they adopt an austerity budget, whatever it may be, there are going to be some cuts or possibly some taxes, which might, I would think if they pass any kind of tax, it would be temporary to get us out of this hole. And, you know, an emergency type, revenue measure, and that's the time to do it right out the box, and then get it done, and then try to undo it as things get better, and you know, see what they can do to keep the city functioning and get the city functioning and keep it functioning.
And tell me again where this hole came from. This was overspending, under revenue, underestimating revenue.
The biggest reason for the hole in this budget is overtime spending. And the mayor's saying, oh, it's all about the terrorist attack on January 1. No, it's not all about that. It's that and consultants, outside consultants. Those two things account for millions and millions of dollars. And frankly, the administration, which sees the spending day to day, either took its eye off the ball or didn't release that information in time for the council to do something mid-year. But, you know, the terrorist attack happened on January 1. So why did we not hear about this budget crisis until September, early October? Why is that? Why did it take 9 months for the administration to say, oh, yeah, we got a budget problem. We got a deficit, and it's more than $100 million. That's what my
when it comes to. Okay, when it comes to the honeymoon, if you will, with Helena Moreno, the public has realized that this is a mess she's inheriting, right?
Yes, you think? Yes, absolutely. The current mayor is leaving the new administration and the council in the biggest hole I think that any mayor has ever left a successor in, because it's recurring. We have over $100 million deficit this year. Okay, we have 2.5 months to dig out of it, to save over $100 million. I mean, think about that. And for the mayor to wait till October to tell people, or late September, that is absolutely ridiculous. It's misfeasance, if not malfeasance.
But they did know about it in February a little bit, right? The council did?
In February? I don't think so.
I thought J.P. Morrell told me that.
Well, he might have. He might have said it could happen, but I don't think he predicted $100 million deficit back in February, because if he had, he would have done something about it.
I got you. I'm just trying to get a handle on it. I know they went from something, the number went from 40 to 100 to 30. I don't know. Real quick, when it comes to Helena Moreno and the support that she got from around the city, are you surprised, Manny, of it?
Not really. You know, the voters of New Orleans know her, they trust her, and what they like about her is the fact that she stays calm in the middle of a storm, so to speak. She doesn't, you know, react in a very emotional way the current mayor does and get angry and curse people out. She works well with people that she disagrees with. And the mayor we have can't even work well with people that she agrees with. So it's a complete change in tone and style and substance. So that's what they voted for.
Tell me how you said that. You said they got politics, they got reality.
Politics,
and what'd you say,
they got politics and law, and their intersection of those two is reality. If you look at it on a Venn diagram,
and that's what we're dealing with. Thank you, Clancy.
Okay, appreciate it, man.
Take it easy. Pleasure as always. Clancy Dubose, WWL Louisiana political analyst. We'll talk to Newell Norman when we come back. We're live at the People's Health Medicare Center, 953, 7 till 10 on WWL.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.